Welcome back to the Footballer's Life podcast from The Incomparable, where we discuss the show Ted Lasso. Today, we're talking about Season 2, Episode 5, Rainbow. I'm your entirely unqualified host, James Thompson, who is hoping to get by on his positivity and charm alone, and I have assembled quite the rom-communist party to discuss this reference-laden episode. We have a new signing to the podcast. We have Heather Berberet. Welcome.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
No newcomer to Player Tactics, my D&D teammate, Aileen Sims.
I am so excited to talk to you about this Valentine's Day episode of Ted Lasso.
And last but not least, we are joined by Coach Shannon Suddoth.
Glad to be here. I was not born caffeinated.
So I think this is a very fun episode, as we have said, because it is just full of so many references to pretty much all the classic rom-coms. And in a football setting, and I was quite surprised with this, how well this worked on me, all the rom-com trappings, despite it's like a man running to be a football coach or whatever. So this episode starts with Nate rather unsuccessfully trying to reserve a table at his parents' favorite Greek restaurant for their anniversary. And I'm going to ask you, what do you think of Nate's journey through this season? Because he seems to be a different person in every episode that we've seen.
I'm not sure about totally different person, but he's certainly like trying to find himself, you know, his new identity as a coach. He only got to that point at the end of last season. I loved the metaphor of that opening bit where he goes to the door and he's pushing when he should pull. And that just feels like that's kind of where he is mentally at the moment. He is doing pushing in places where he should be pulling and vice versa. As he sort of tries to sort out who he is at this point.
I'm really hoping that the next episode is him going to therapy, because he's a little bit lost. He definitely needs to talk to somebody. I'm spending like every episode this season like, dude, you gotta calm down and you need to talk to somebody, because Nate is not my favorite character this season by any stretch of the imagination, and he needs to sort himself out, I think.
You know, when we compare where Nate is today with where he was last season at the beginning, where he was like stunned of the concept that someone would give him a compliment, and to see him now in this very awkward, graceless stage of trying to push himself into a new sense of self. I mean, I think that kind of awkwardness and, you know, that's that scene of too much, too little, not quite right. I think that's really how change happens. So I'm kind of enjoying Nate. I feel like I often am him. Like I'm trying to get more confident. I'm trying to be secure in my sense of self. And then I just look like an ugly duckling often. That's how I feel. So I appreciate Nate's awkwardness. But I do hope it keeps going, right? I'm hoping that we have an end goal, end place for Nate that feels resolved and settled.
And I think we will. At some point, one of the producers pointed out that the character you see first on the screen for the season is sort of the character they're going to focus on a major arc for them. Last season, that was Rebecca. She was the very first person we saw, and the season, you know, among all of the other subplots, was her, you know, coming to terms where she could, where she could finally break out of Rupert's shadow and take charge of herself. And so the first scene of this season was a focus on Nate on the field. And I think Nate's journey is going to be the underpinning, you know, and we're seeing things go back and forth. And I really like that where he is changes with sort of what situation he's in. Or who he's with, you know, going to Keeley and like hugging the cushion and, you know, sort of telling her, being able to be open with her about kind of, you know, as he wants to be famous. But what he's trying to say is he just wants to be free to be more himself. or be able to accept himself better. I loved that. And I loved that Keeley was immediately like, come on, let's go and let's talk to Rebecca. And they try to help him. And he manages to apply that in the end pretty well in the restaurant. You know, not spitting in a mirror, notwithstanding. I mean, you know, I'm glad it worked for him, but dude.
Yeah, that was a bit strange. We'll come back to that.
He's weird, though.
I think it was like because he kind of came like right out of the gate as a bit of a jerk in like the first few episodes, and then he kind of mellows, and then it's strange.
Yeah, like the only person we've seen him be really ugly to is Will, the young man who took over his job, and that's the job that he knows back and forth. And, you know, yes, there's a want to see it done correctly aspect to it, but, you know, of course he's going about it all wrong. And then on the other hand, when he tells Ted and Beard, you know, that he'll be the one to talk to Roy, and, you know, God, Ted laughs. And, you know, that's how do you take that, the fact that, you know, Ted does not see you as that kind of a coach at all. So,
yeah. So Nate is not very successful and leaves. One of the things that I liked from this, to stick with the rom-com theme, this is actually a real restaurant, and it's an Italian restaurant, and it's in Notting Hill. So it kind of fits with your Notting Hill.
As someone who like hasn't seen more than maybe a scene or two of like any of these rom-coms, I mean, almost all the references flew over my head, but I was still enjoying the episode. Did they have the like unbelievably lacking in customer service waitress there too?
By Notting Hill, I meant it is physically in the location of Notting Hill rather than film of Notting Hill.
Gotcha.
But I think there are probably a lot of references that flew over my head as well. I mean, I've got quite a few of them, but there's some really obscure ones, which I had to sort of track down as I was making notes on this. But then we cut from this and more people having sort of problems, and the team are watching a previous match, and Isaac is really grumpy and sort of shouting at the rest of the team and, you know, not really fulfilling his role as captain particularly well. Also in this scene, poor Nate has been given an indoor whistle, which doesn't actually make any noise.
That was terrific.
Poor Nate.
But yes, so we get the line that kind of sets up the whole thing is Ted says that he believes in communism, and there's a beat as everyone looks at him, and he says, rom-communism, that is. And he's...
And then Coach Beard snarfs, which is hysterical, right?
Yeah. there's so many things with reaction shots, like if you're watching it a second time, it's like, don't look at the person who's speaking, look at all the other people. And it's
in particular, Coach Beard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's hysterical, yeah.
And Ted says that, you know, fairy tales do not start nor do they end in a dark forest. And he's kind of like, it's all going to work out. And the doc is at the back taking notes because I am not sure that Ted's solutions to these things are going to work out for everything. I think he's getting a lot right, but I think he needs to start listening to her. And I don't think he is yet.
But that's existential spiritual comment, right? Too, like, it all works out how it's supposed to. He didn't say it's going to be good. He didn't say you're going to be happy. He didn't say he said it all works out the way it's supposed to, you know, and we'll get to Rebecca and her mysterious banter man. But
well,
I think it's possible we're seeing a different side of Ted, one that's a little bit not quite so, you know.
What I liked about that, number one, I think that was also potentially the writers having some fun with meta, telling the viewers, you know, things may not happen the way you hope, they may not happen the way you expect, but they'll happen the way they're supposed to happen.
Exactly.
And I also liked about that scene how so pretty much most of the team has at this point totally bought into Ted's approach. you know, he starts to turn to Coach Beard to ask for examples, and the players start shouting out names. The
one of my favorite moments. So good.
Yeah, the players are all happy to buy in at this point. And the little things, as you all said, after seeing Moss, the Dutch player, make the mistake, and they see it on film, and the two guys sitting next to him both just sort of touch him on the shoulder. It's like, it's okay, dude, you know, sort of sympathizing with him. And just having them really be a team, you know, Isaac notwithstanding, Isaac in his head and Isaac, you know, feeling the weight of captain, of the captain's role. But they are such a team this season, and I love watching it.
In this also, we get the Doc offers to talk to Isaac, and Ted says no. And then immediately after that, we have the bit where Nate says that he will talk to Isaac, and Ted laughs. And for both of those, I thought, yeah, this is not going to end well for either of these decisions.
That felt like a very un-Ted-like moment when he laughed at Nate.
Yeah.
I mean, he does apologize immediately when he realizes he's done something wrong.
But I also think it's telling that it sort of shows that for Ted, Nate's role is the strategist. That's what got Nate onto the coaching staff, was the fact that he had strategies and plays and things that would work. And, you know, I sort of see, like, you know, Ted's vision of, you know, setting up for the future is Nate's the strategist, and we'll get to it, but Roy's the motivator. So Ted, it never even occurred to him to ask Nate to do anything motivating for Isaac.
That moment kind of from Nate's point of view. Like, we just see these moments that are just so cringeworthy because Nate doesn't have the respect or the sense of importance, whether it be the, you know, the woman at the restaurant, or he doesn't get a coffee machine because he's not important enough, and he's not, you know, is not respected enough to be the big hitter, right? So for me, I was just in Nate's skin, just kind of feeling so cringy about all those moments. That makes sense that's how Ted sees him as well.
That's also an evolution from last season when he was very content. Well, he wasn't necessarily content to be behind the scenes, but he was accepting of his role as kind of the person who, I don't know, like the little brownie sprite behind the scenes, you know, making everything go smoothly for the players, but being not just unappreciated, but bullied. In this season, we're seeing him wanting acknowledgement and recognition and appreciation, which I think is like an important thing for him, just acknowledging that is something that he is deserving of, I think is a pretty cool thing that they're doing with him.
Yeah, it's really interesting, the shift, because as you said, the first half of the first season, he was being physically bullied all the time. And we got away from that to the point where he was, you know, first a part of the team and then, you know, a part of the staff. And the things we're seeing this season are more like microaggressions. You know, people aren't realizing that either they're still seeing him as still, you know, the kit man, even though he's now part of the coaching staff and all that. But the thing is, that still hurts on Nate's end. You know, it's a different kind of, it's not deliberate bullying, but it still hurts. And that's why I'm going to be interested to see how things develop, because on the one hand, he does get moments of support, like Rebecca and Keely, you know, helping him and giving him advice. But on the other hand, these small microaggressions keep happening. And at some point, you know, at some point, it's going to blow up.
Yeah, I think they're laying a lot of groundwork for future conflict. And we're just going to see these things snowball as the season goes on. You said that there was the scene with Keeley who's passing out the free Nespresso machines to all the players and he doesn't get one. And for a second, I thought that was going to lead to some commentary on Nestle and pod coffee and stuff to fit in with the things we had about the oil stuff. And then I thought, what are you saying? This is like a product placement. Of course, they're not going to say anything negative about them.
Though, I think, was there an American? Did we hear an American accent with that player who asked for cash?
No,
he's Canadian.
He's Canadian. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought, wait, when did they slip in an American player? But it made perfect sense because he was the one who asked for cash, which I thought was hysterical, which doesn't seem the same commentary on Canada to my mind. But anyway, just clarifying that.
And we have, like, in that scene, we then have Rebecca, who is chatting to a mystery man on the Banter app, which, as they've established previously, is an app where you don't know anything about the person at the other end that you're talking to. And one of the things that she's talking to, the screen name of the person that she's talking to is LDN152. And I had to look this up. Tom Hanks's AOL name in You've Got Mail was NY152.
Yes.
So it's... And that was a reference.
And I'm in a Discord of Ted Lasso fans, and some of them were speculating that it's London and some kind of postal code. And they're like, well, what is that, Ted's postal code? Because, of course, they all wanted to be Ted. And
it's no, they're making it too obvious for.
Yeah, that's what I think. The cut later on where mm-hmm. she's on the thing and then he's on his right. phone is too obvious to me. That it is him. And this show constantly, if it does anything, is subverts your expectations.
True.
So we're all expecting it to be Ted. And I'm thinking, okay, worst case scenario, it's Rupert.
Oh my gosh.
Nah.
I think that's too mean for the show.
And as someone said in a chat reaction that we were having, would Rupert ever get on a dating app where he couldn't see what she looks like?
He would be on Tumescence, right? That's that other one she's on.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one Rupert would be on.
Rupert
and I'm pretty sure she'd
one.
Recognize his pick.
But yeah.
Can I just say that the screen just seems to begin to sparkle and glow and send off rainbows when Juno and Hannah show up together? Like, yeah. There's just something qualitatively different when Rebecca and Keeley are on screen that I just love.
Best
it's, they're just magic
duo.
Together. Yeah,
good. Best
they're amazing.
Also, they would never do this because of Keeley and Roy, but I did think perhaps it's Keeley she's talking to. But I don't know where they're going with that. And the whole thing, because there's this social network where you don't know who you're talking to, it's been set up that she's talking to somebody and it's going to be a surprise who it is. Mm-hmm. And I want to know where they're going.
It just, this just popped into my head right now. Who would be the kind of person to toss out a Rilke reference? Coach Beard.
Yeah, but he's got his chess woman.
But that's off and on. That's, you know, yeah, it's like it's they're together, they're apart, they're together, they're apart. So
I don't want it to be Ted for reasons. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a little obvious for it to be Ted. But I love the idea that this goes with what I said earlier about Ted's kind of saying it, this spiritual, it'll all be okay in the end. Like, I think Ted has a secret Rilke inside. Like, I think mm-hmm. that's who he is in his most tender, intimate, not trying to be a coach guy. I think he's that guy. So I love it in terms of Ted the character. I just don't know that I love it in terms of the show, and also agree with you that I don't think they go there. But I like that Ted would quote Rilke in an anonymous dating app.
I mean, I think we're going to find out pretty soon. I read there was somebody who had screener copies of the whole season and was doing a general review of it. I think they made a reference to something happening in episode 6 that was going to kind of upset the apple cart or whatever.
Well, Ted already told us that it's darkest in the middle of the story. That's when they go to the woods. So one can only presume that we've got a couple episodes of darkness ahead of us, right? Of being lost in the woods.
We're halfway through a rising action. We're up to the big climactic part, and then everything will start sorting itself out.
I did like the reference that was just after this to AFC Wrexham having been bought by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, are we going to get like some weird Mythic Quest crossover style thing, or is Ryan Reynolds going to turn up at the end of the season? Or like, I did like, I don't know if you've seen, Ryan Reynolds posted a thing after this saying how terrible it was that they were sort of making fun of their ownership of the club and all that. but they wanted to be paid off in Ted Lasso's biscuits. So I do not think they were serious. And we get, just after this, we get the sort of the episode title where it comes from, which is Higgins' ringtone for his wife on his phone is She's a Rainbow by the Rolling Stones. And he tells the story of how they met, and he was a brooding punk, and he implies like a large a quiff, and he accidentally pours beer over his head, and everybody laughs at him apart from one woman who hands him a towel, and that's his wife. And he recommends to Rebecca that the best brand is to be herself on this app.
Between the time they introduced the family at the end of last season to the Christmas episode to now, I'm sorry, the Higgins family cannot get any more pure. They are just darling. I love that presence and that through line of this one cohesive family unit, that everything's all right, everything's good, now that his job is like a steady and supportive place again. It's wonderful.
In a cast of incredibly endearing characters, I just find Higgins to just get more and more endearing. Even just, it was so interesting how the director shot that scene between him and Rebecca, where Rebecca was sitting down and Higgins was standing up. And they did this a couple times, I noticed, in other places, where the camera was kind of up on Higgins, and I think really demonstrating the respect that everyone is developing for him, because he looks so, you know, he's awkward and he's strange, but there really is this deep core to this character. And I think they're all discovering that he is exactly what you just said, Shannon, like this island of stability amongst all of their dramatic change and growth and finding themselves again and everything. And I just, every episode we get to see him, I like him more.
And we go from that to Nate lurking outside Keeley's office and eventually getting enough courage to go in and ask to be made famous because he wants to book this mythical window table in the restaurant just to like make his parents proud of him. And Keeley marches them off to Rebecca's office, and her response is, initially thinking that he wants some very fancy restaurant, she just goes, I'll just buy the restaurant then.
I know, I loved that.
They did, that was another moment, they did some great storytelling with the camera, right? Because we see Nate put back and forth right outside her door, and he's like, no, I don't need anything. And then there's the shot of, it's the end of a hallway, there's no other reason he could possibly be there. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it was so brilliant, I think. Yeah, love it. Loved it. Loved it.
And we cut to Roy's church, which is his favorite kebab place.
Wait, back up. We got to talk about Rebecca getting big. Like,
okay. That's later.
Is it later? Oh, maybe it is. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. We can go to Roy then. Yeah.
Yeah, because all these scenes cut back and forth, and it is really good. But anyway, yes, next scene, we see the photos on the wall at Roy's kebab place, which is George Wendt from Cheers, Roy, and I think it's Marcus Mumford who does the music for the show. And he's in this kebab place, and he has been told that he's going to get a mustachioed surprise that will anger him. And he initially goes to Wario, which I really liked as a reference.
Yep. Or his aunt.
But it was indeed Ted appearing. And Ted is basically there just to get help for Isaac. And he knows that the one person who he believes in to do it is Roy. And yes, I liked this scene a lot.
Do you think that Ted went into that scene to recruit Roy into coaching, or just to ask for help with Isaac? Because and then maybe asked for more so he could get less. And I wondered about what Ted was really thinking in that scene, what he really wanted.
I mean, I think you've got to work at a relationship. So he's, you know, starting with some stuff and they're going off and they're going to have a nice experience together. And then he's going to hit him with the real thing. I don't know, like, if that's in his head at that point. But I think it's
a good way to try and handle Roy. You know, to ask for the big thing that he knows or feels that Roy will almost certainly shoot down. And then, okay, well, but can we do this smaller thing? And, you know, and of course, you know, having already seen that Roy was, you know, on the sports show and, you know, talking about, you know, Isaac's good. He's a good lad. He's just, you know, he'll find his way. You know, so even that layer of, yes, Roy would be willing to help a former fellow player, the player that he selected as captain. Roy does have a sense of responsibility about a lot of things, and this would be one of them. He put Isaac in that place. So I think it's perfect, reasonable to expect that Roy would, you know, given the invitation, would say, yes, I will talk to him. I will help.
I think also Roy is a brooder. I mean, just by his very, like, physical nature, you know. And I think Ted knows that from season one. It was, there were a couple of incidents where Ted would kind of suggest something and Roy would immediately reject it because that's gruff Roy immediately rejecting everything. And then, you know, Roy walking it back after he's considered and thought about it and maybe been pushed a little bit more by the writer's room in the script. But, you know, I think that that's something else that Ted knows about him is that, you know, the power of suggestion with Roy is really important because Roy is not a quick to change person. He is considered and deliberate in a lot of the things he does, except for cursing, which just flows out like a river. But I think that Ted got what he wanted, which was immediate help for Isaac, and also he got Roy to thinking.
And now we can get to the role play section of the episode with the restaurant, the fake restaurant set up for Nate to come in and try and get his window seats. And I there was like three great parts in this, I think. There's the line about you dithering kestrel, which is like where Nate goes to as his...
Slightly better than calling Rebecca a shrew last season, but...
Well, yes. We have, of course, the scene of Rebecca making herself big, which is just such a... I mean, Rebecca, I think she must be significantly taller than all of those people for a start. And then making herself even bigger, it was an impressive bit of just physical...
Bless Hannah Waddingham for going all in.
And then Keely says, "Let's invade France."
I know. Yes. Oh,
that was my third thing.
I love it so much.
Yeah, she may be in a relationship with Roy, but she does not hold back in her admiration for Rebecca.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have the thing where Isaac is taken by Ted to visit Roy and there's the other bit, which I thought was a great physical comedy, of they text Roy and he's standing right in front of them. The phone lights up and he's sort of illuminated like a horror film.
We had to pause the playback because Chip was laughing so hard at that point. Almost fell out of his chair laughing.
It was just really well done. And it's done, you know, you would have seen him standing there, but it's cut together well and it's a good laugh. So this is the football ground that Roy played at as a kid, looked over by his old flat, and he always came back there and played when he was in Rough Patch, so that's why he's brought Isaac there. And yeah, it's a nice scene where in the space of a few minutes, Isaac rediscovers his love of the game and everything is magically fixed.
Not magically, but a boost.
Yeah.
I mean, a definite boost. I mean, I certainly was enjoying, you know, seeing, you know, poor Isaac, who's been all surly the first half of the episode, and, you know, like, even walking out with his Nespresso, just sort of holding it in his arms with his hood up. He's just so, you know, grumpy and sour. And then to see that smile again as, you know, he starts to loosen up and just play for fun, and then to be able to carry that feeling into the next game with the warm-ups, which we'll get to in a few minutes.
Well, and what, I mean, how powerful would it be to have your mentor and your coach tell you to go have fun? Stop worrying about being, you know, stop worrying about winning. Stop worrying about being the captain. Go have fun. And I think that that's pretty real to, I mean, yes, of course, it was like a magical sequence. It happened super fast. But I do think it's really powerful to have the magical people in your life, right? Your coach and your idol tell you to go have fun and enjoy the thing you love. I think that's a lot of freedom and permission there. So I bought it. I was in.
And we're back at Nate, and he's at the restaurant with his parents, who are sort of like picking lint off his shoulder and generally not exactly. Well, you can see why Nate is Nate through some of these interactions.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nate's dad seems pretty critical.
Yeah, and of course,
hard to please.
Jade takes them to the promised tiny table in the corner.
By the kitchen.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't go to this restaurant. Like, if I was treated like this.
Tell me about it. It's like, why is that, you know, if no one's at the table and you've got people who come in, why don't you put them there? What is her thinking? Who is her manager?
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense because all of the other tables are way far back for some reason. Like, this is not an efficient usage of their square footage. But also, like, anybody walking by just sees this empty table and it looks like the restaurant is empty. And I don't know, I grew up under the probably mistaken philosophy. Like, you want a full parking lot, right? When you go to a restaurant, you don't want to go to the abandoned restaurant. You want to go to the one with a lot of people there. And it's kind of the same thing when you're walking by. Like, do you want to go to the restaurant where it looks like abandoned or not? It's weird.
That was a reason I wondered if it was like, if this was meant to be some kind of movie reference I wasn't getting, because their business model makes no sense.
Well, and to American eyes, it looks racial, right? True. That's what it looked like to me.
We're
not going to put you in the front. We're going to put you in the back by the kitchen. And I mean, this is an American TV show, so they must have known that it was going to read that way.
I mean, and that kind of thing does exist, you know, in Britain as well. So,
yeah, and I didn't read it that way. And, you know, I'm not going to claim that Britain is any better than America on that front, but it didn't occur to me on those grounds. And I thought it was just like, oh, there's only three of them and we want to keep that big table open or something like that. Which kind of ties up into the way that he later on says that, you know, they'll be in and out really quickly. But yeah, he goes into the toilet and he does his own version of trying to make himself big. And he initially looks like he's going to go for the Rebecca thing. And then he spits in his own face.
Yeah.
And it's just so like...
with more of the Roy Kent approach.
Yeah, but it just seemed like...
I'm Nate effing Shelley, so...
Yeah, there was that. But it just seemed to me, it felt like his view of himself was so low.
I read that he was spitting on the mirror of the restaurant.
Well, no,
but, you know.
It made me think more of what James was saying, because the one time I remember seeing something like that was from the movie Heathers, where the super popular Heather, they've gone to this party. She's just been pushed into having sex with this guy, and she's like in the bathroom and looking at herself and getting a drink of water. And then she spits it all over the mirror at herself, like in a bit of form of self-hatred. So that's what made me think a little bit of it.
But, you know, whatever, it works. He goes out there. He's assertive, but charming and not, like, mean, which I think is important.
Right.
And he gets the table. He asks her for her number. She says no, which, good, you know. And there's a kind of callback to the, she says, sorry, I'm picky. And there's a previous line about him being picky and other.
Yeah. But the fact that he says, I'm picky back to her, it's like, you know, at the same time, he accepts the rejection gracefully, but is also, that's paying her a compliment if he's saying he's picky too. So it's, you know.
I mean, he got the table. It's a good first step.
Yeah.
Though his dad doesn't seem pleased. His dad is confusing to me. Like, I can't tell. Like, on the second time through, there was this very brief moment where his dad looks back at the table and then looks at Nate and then walks to, like, looks at the table in the front in the window and then looks at Nate and then walks to the back. And I'm like, did his dad expect? Did Nate promise the front table? And then dad just is not pleased. Nothing makes this man smile, you know, which I get is how Nate got to where he is at. But I was still confused on what the dad was about.
I think there's a lot of this show seems to be about problem relationships with fathers. And, you know, I think
all shows are about problem relationships with fathers, just so you know.
Fair. But I do think, you know, the show has been setting up like Jamie's father and what's going on there and Ted's father. And yeah, I'm curious. I mean, I think on the scale of fathers, Nate's father's not terrible, but it's definitely he's been put down for a lot. So now we move on to the sort of the walking away from the Isaac's rebirth into football, and Ted says, nice work tonight, coach, you know, sort of trying that label on. And we then get basically I think it was four rom-com references in a row.
Gorgeous, so amazing, that
we
writing.
Get the
oh
when Harry met Sally about, you know, when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life coaching somebody or whatever. I can't remember how they changed the quote.
Coaching with somebody, yeah.
Yeah. We have the Jerry Maguire, you complete me type line. We get the Notting Hill, you know, just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her line. And we get the Princess Bride, as you wish.
As you wish.
And I loved all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So clever.
And, yeah. You know, of course, he says no.
He's, you know, Roy.
Yeah.
He's oppositional. He always says no about everything all the time, right? As someone, I'm not sure if it was Shannon or Lean, but someone already identified that.
So we get another callback just after that, which is Beard and Ted to a joke, which I think was season one, which we never got the payoff of, which was, what does a British owl say? And then we have, like, some, I think it's a When Harry Met Sally reference with, like, the various couples in the stands. And we have a same-sex couple as well, which is nice just that they put in there. But we have this old couple who sort of relate their love story about how they met in the football ground. And I think that's the first time we've kind of had, like, to camera stuff in Ted Lasso, like,
yeah,
you know, fourth
wall
breaking.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure what their justification of that was, other than they just wanted to do, like, a reference to When Harry Met Sally. But
I don't know. I just remember going, like, what is this? Because I'm one of those people who have never seen When Harry Met Sally all the way through. So,
oh my God. Well, if you are a devotee, like some of us, you just immediately laughed your ass off the couch as soon as they started. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have more of Rebecca flirting on the phone through her app. And then we get the cut immediately to Ted, who's texting away on his phone and smiling. And what I did was I went back and I looked at all the language that was used in the previous comments. None of it had US versus UK spelling differences. So there were no, like,
nothing obvious
U's or anything. And I was like, the fact that there wasn't, you know, I'm now thinking, okay, somebody's done this thinking about it. I realize that I'm trying to like completely deconstruct this and try and like get to the mystery. But
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a triple cross. Like they're leading us so hard down here, and then it's going to be something. It's going to suddenly look like something else, and then go back to them. Who knows? I just trust them to do it well.
We know these writers are cleverer than we are. So
yeah.
Ted is feeling under pressure, and he does his little musical reference, of course. But again, he won't take help from the doc. We have Nate in an even fancier suit. Nate is just starting to sort of level up every mm-hmm. time we see him.
I like Ted's reaction to him as well, just sort of making a, whether he was remembering his faux pas from earlier or not, but he was, you know, or just uplifting him, but he was, you know, very effusive.
And he does drop the Albert Einstein quote about, if you're out to describe the truth, leave elegance to the tailor. And it's like, yeah, that is the kind of thing that Rebecca's probably getting in her app. So, but yeah, then we get to the most rom-commy bit of the whole episode, this sort of end sequence. And Roy is back on his TV show on his Sky Sports, and he's being a pundit, and he's asked to sort of comment on it. And he kind of, he realizes, he says, you know, we're just on the outside looking in. We can't know what's happening. We can't like help them. And they're like, oh, I bet you don't miss the cold. And he just goes, I miss all of it. Mm-hmm. Now there is a point in this episode that I have to reference, because during this, when they're cutting to the footage, there is the Varani Sports branding on the side of the pitch. And one of the things that is on it is a very clear URL to www.varanisports.co.uk. And I thought, I bet they've done some really clever, like, in-universe thing.
Because
this is... Mm-hmm. This is the sports equipment people who do the strips for the players. And I thought, oh, we're going to get some little website. And I went to it, and there was nothing there. And I thought, oh, that's strange. And then I looked it up, and the website was unregistered. So I went and got my credit card faster than I've ever got my credit card before. So I am now the owner of varanisports.co.uk, which currently redirects to this very podcast you are listening to now.
Master stroke.
Good job.
You are as clever as those writers, James.
So such time as Apple Legal contacts me.
And hopefully wants to buy that out from
I
you.
I was going
to
say.
A chunk of change.
You know,
that's a huge oversight.
I can't believe, and somebody contacted me and said, and I looked it up and it's true, that it was actually in episode one, in the part where Danny has a sort of like nightmare where he's seeing a cartoon goalie
right.
of the dog.
Right.
It's in the background there too, the full URL. So it's been out there for 5 weeks.
Wow.
And nobody noticed that it didn't point to anything and that Apple didn't own it.
Until you.
Yeah, and I just find it really strange that I was the first person to actually have that thought. Anyway, so
maybe it was some really deep, like, recruitment technique of who's the fan that's going to figure this out, because maybe we need them for something, right? Because it takes a special brain right there.
I think, yeah, I am curious where this goes. At time of recording, I have not had any contact from Apple. So we shall see. But yes, we then have the sort of, which I believe is a Sleepless in Seattle moment, where mm-hmm. he turns to Jeff and he says, Jeff, I have to go. and Jeff realizes he needs to go, you know.
Can I just, again, you know, applause for Brett Goldstein, because that is like an incredibly emotional scene. And, you know, the acting there, because there's not a lot that he's, I mean, there's so much that he's doing, but all of it is like so subtle, right? Mm-hmm. But it's so intensely true It just made me cry a little bit because, you know, there's Roy having some pretty profound transformation right before our eyes. And the acting to give us that, I bow down. He's amazing.
The way he started, like the minute they asked him about the new rookie player, and Roy turns around, he's 17. Mm-hmm. And, you know, immediately that pinged the, what is he like with Phoebe? What is he like coaching the little girls? Mm-hmm. You know, it was always there. That instinct of his has always been there. And this just sort of started a floodgate that led him into realizing it's like, yeah, that's where I want to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as I said, you know, this is, you know, it's about a football coach rushing to a football match. And yet it mm-hmm. got me every match as, mm-hmm. you know, somebody running in an airport to catch somebody before they get on their flight.
Well, it's really about this man finding himself again, right? I mean, it's a reflective, it doesn't have as much focus in the episode as Nate's transformation or Rebecca's transformation, right? Because Rebecca's also, I mean, she threw that phone across, right? She wrote love, I suppose, and then couldn't stand that she'd been that vulnerable. And Keely's talking about branding. I mean, this is all about self and identity and transformation and how do we do it? And, you know, for Roy in that moment, it was a person finding themselves or recreating themselves in a way that was so authentic and finding their joy. And who doesn't respond to that? Like, who is it like, yes, I want to live my authentic life, you know? So
Roy runs out the studio, gets in a cab, bribes the cab driver with quite a significant amount of money. I didn't see what those notes were, but there was a lot of them.
There was a lot of them. Whose anniversary it is, right? Keeping yep. with the, you know, yep. Valentine's Day theme.
And he gets so far, and then he has to get out the taxi and run, and then his knee goes, and he, you know, he's got this time limit that he wants to get there before the start of the match. Mm-hmm. And then eventually he gets on one of the sort of like bikes and is pedaled there, promising again probably a very expensive watch just mm-hmm. to get him there in the next 10 minutes.
I need to go back and look if that was the same one that we saw in the charity ball episode in season one.
He's probably got a lot of watches, I imagine.
Not an Apple Watch.
And he tries to get in the grounds and they don't let him in because they don't recognize him somehow.
He doesn't have a ticket.
But we get
a callback. And he's not swearing.
We get a callback to the first episode of this season where it stated that there's always a ticket waiting for him in the names of various country singers, as far as I can tell, female country singers.
Yes.
Reba McEntire. She tweeted out earlier today.
Did.
Which I liked, referring to herself as Red Lasso, which was nice.
Good for her.
So he gets his ticket. He resets his knee with a really horrible crunch.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's how you do that.
He did it before in an episode or two ago, so apparently it's a thing.
I don't want to give medical advice, but probably don't do that.
I'm frankly was surprised that he ran as long as he did before his knee went out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then he walks out onto the pitch and he gets his traditional welcoming chant. And everybody kind of turns and sees him coming up. And he walks up to Ted and does the "you had me at coach" line.
So good.
And Keely, like the look on Keely's face when he walks into mm-hmm. is just... is so good. I say this every episode, every time I talk about Ted Lasso. I love Roy and Keely. I love them together. Mm-hmm. And I love how, like, she just wants him to be supported and happy and feeling fulfilled. And just, like, that look of support on her face and kind of amazement was nice. I love... She's a great actress. She's really good.
Yeah.
I think this show... if there's any justice, it is going to create a whole load of stars that are going to come out of this.
Yeah,
they're all going to spin off into doing this. I mean, they've all been around for a long time. I was surprised to learn that Hannah Waddington is the shame woman from Game of Thrones mm-hmm. and things like that. But and Brett Goldstein's been doing things for a long time. But yeah, every one of these people needs to have their own show. Or ideally just give us the spin-off between Roy and Keeley. You know, if they're looking for a way to keep the show going after three seasons, that's what we want. The only thing that I wondered about this is, like, much in the same way that Ted brought back Jamie without really talking to anybody, he seems to have brought Roy in without talking to his other two coaches. And Beard seems like, he looks like he's crying in a sort of, like, good way. Mm-hmm. Nate does not look happy.
Mm-mm.
Because he's basically had his stock devalued by another third or whatever. And
yeah, because he's not, again, his identity is wrapped up in being coach, not realizing, again, that, you know, he will balance Roy. What if they all are given the room and the space to figure it out? He will be the strategy, Roy will be the motivation, and they will be able to work together eventually, I hope.
My theory for the absolute end of the show is we have Roy as coach, and we have Nate as his coach Beard, effectively, and the other two go back to the States. You know, they've done the sort of, like, the kung fu style, come into town, they've sorted the problems, they move on. And I think that's how it's going to go. And they're just setting up both Roy and Nate to be the best versions of themselves to carry on their own. But we've got 1.5 seasons to go. And I think we're going to get some conflict pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Well, and not just between them, but between Ted and Dr. Fieldstone as well, right? They just keep stitching that up, right? They just keep adding little bits to that, and it's coming and it's coming. I'm looking forward to it because I don't understand her at all, and I really want to. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I mean, they're not, like, as antagonistic as they were at the start of the season, but he's not listening to her. And we know that she's hyper-competent at her job. So... I think Ted has to fall apart for whatever reason. And I think...
That's what it took last season for him to take the step of finalizing his divorce. So, it's going to take something like that before he's ready to accept whatever help Dr. Sharon can offer.
Yeah.
Well, and Ted has panic disorder because when he had a panic attack last season, he knew what it was and he knew what to do about it. And that's not what happens when you have your first panic attack. So he has panic disorder. So I'm wondering if, yes, he's going to get something's going to happen and he's going to lose it. And I wonder, you know, Ted is very self-contained, right? He's very, very independent guy. Like he kind of does it all himself. And I wonder if part of his growth and development isn't that to maintain a relationship, you can't be all together without needing anyone else all the time, right? Like you've got that healthy reliance on other people is part of what builds relationships. So anyway, I'm curious about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we were saying about trying to get everyone else to their best versions of themselves, I think the same is going to be true for Ted. Mm-hmm. And I think he has more problems perhaps than he thinks he has.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, he's repressing like everything, right? Like, he's not dealing with the problems in his team. He didn't do it last season either. You know, there was a lot of bullying going on that he just kind of gently encouraged team leaders to resolve, but he didn't really step in with it. And he's just, I think it goes back to his positivity is a mask for a lot of discomfort. You know, that's how he redirects. And so it's going to be interesting because we know that he's gonna have a come to therapy moment, and it's going to be I'm really interested to see what they do with that, because it's been a pro-therapy season. Therapy is amazing. Everybody should go to therapy. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they allow Dr. Sharon to kind of pick him apart and help him put himself back together again, because I'm confident that that's what they're going to do or what they're going to embark upon, but I'm not sure how they're going to do it.
So, I mean, I would say this is probably, well, it's certainly my favorite episode of this season, and it's really up there in the general, my top episodes for Ted Lasso. I did enjoy all the rom-com references, just and using the trappings of a rom-com to tell, you know, a story about football. But yeah, I mean, what as a sort of last thought, what did you all think?
This is definitely my favorite episode so far this season. I just thought it was really cleverly directed and written, and of course the acting is beautiful. But it was just super fun, right? It was just really fun. You know, feel good episode of the epitome of feel good TV show, right? So
yeah.
I'm all on board for this one. Yeah.
I'm feeling really, I don't know, I have feelings about the Nate arc in the story that I haven't quite worked through. I think it's because he is so uncomfortable, and as, you know, a person who tends towards maybe too much empathy, I'm really kind of bogged down in that. So that makes this episode a little bit more challenging for me versus like the Christmas episode, which got a lot of flack, but I loved, I thought it was great. And so I think this is a good episode. I think I will like it more in retrospect than I like now, because, you know, we can tell that they're setting a lot of stuff up and that the resolution is coming soon, as we discussed earlier. So I'm kind of looking forward to viewing it again when I have hindsight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the strengths of this entire series so far, is being able to go back and rewatch and see the seeds that may not have made sense at the time, but have built and are now falling into place. I think for me, I'm still... I think the Christmas episode still sort of has favorite status at the moment for me, in part because one of the things that I love about the entire show is watching the players gel and come together as a team. And we got more of that with like everybody visiting the Higgins household last episode. And this episode was much more focused on individuals. And there wasn't as much of the team spirit happening. Although when it did, it was great. You know, made me so happy seeing Isaac lead everybody in the warm-ups and come up with different handshakes for everybody, you know, ending with a very simple regal bow with Coach Beard, which is actually apparently a reference to a couple of footballers, which I did not know until someone pointed that out. But I did enjoy this episode thoroughly. So many good moments, so many character bits, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Yeah, well, just to thank you all for joining me. Thank you, Heather, for coming on this for the first time, and I hope we were a welcoming team.
It was great. I had a wonderful time. Thanks so much for having me.
I think next week we might be entering the Dark Forest, so look forward to that.
Who's ready to invade France?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. And we'll talk again another time.